Next question is pretty simple. We'll start with Mr. Brown. Are taxes in Maryland too high?
Let me answer it this way, that when we reform our tax code, we can't do it in a piecemeal fashion. So, for example, this year in the General Assembly, we gave tax relief through the estate tax to Maryland's 1,000 wealthiest families. Now, contrary to what I've heard, and this is probably the first time they've heard me say it, so in fairness to Delek Mazur, that tax relief for the estate tax never would have made it to Governor Brown's desk. I would have said to the General Assembly, don't send me tax relief for the 1,000 wealthiest Marylanders until we look at tax reform for all Marylanders, both individuals and companies. So what I know is I'll be guided by three principles in tax reform in the Brown-Ullman administration. In the first 100 days, we'll put together the commission, and we will charge them, ask them to come back with a plan for the January 2016 session. Relief to working families, incentivizing employers to invest in job-creating activities in Maryland. That may be tax cuts, it may be tax credits. And protecting our priorities in education, public safety, the environment, and in public health. What I am not likely to do, unless the evidence is overwhelming, is to give a giveaway, a corporate giveaway to Maryland's largest corporations. Let me tell you why. Two out of every three private sector jobs in Maryland are created by small businesses. They don't pay the corporate income tax. If you want to give relief to small businesses, the small entrepreneurial businesses that drive our economy, because the U.S. Chamber says we rank number one in innovation and entrepreneurship, give a tax break to the small businesses, not the big corporate tax break that others are recommending.
Mr. Brown.
Comprehensive tax reform.
Delegate Mazur.
Tax policy is misaligned in Annapolis right now. What you see are corporations and millionaires getting a lot of tax relief. The millionaire's tax was allowed to expire under this administration. Meanwhile, taxes were raised on all the rest of us. I want to turn that around. That's how I fund my middle-class tax relief, by bringing that millionaire's tax back. I talked to you already about closing that corporate loophole in order to provide small business tax relief. I was the lone voice fighting very hard against that estate tax giveaway. It's a $432 million giveaway over just the first 5 years to the heirs of millionaires, the top 3% of the wealthiest people in our state. What does that mean? That means that we continue to shift the tax burden onto the shoulders of the middle class, because our schools and our infrastructure and our hospitals all still need important funding. And when we're taking money away to give it to the estate tax giveaway, that's why your taxes get raised. I'm bringing new revenue to the table with the marijuana legalization plan. Being governor is about setting priorities and building a budget around it. And I've been very clear in this campaign what my priorities are and what we'll get for them. We'll get middle-class tax relief and small business tax relief. We'll get a universal pre-K plan. And we'll end our failed war on drugs. All of this paid for by closing corporate tax loopholes and asking millionaires to pay their fair share as well.
Mr. Gansler, same question on taxes, but if I could zero in a little bit on your corporate tax proposal. Of all the taxes out there, why is that one your focus?
It's not my focus. The lieutenant governor's made it my focus in three mailers and a television ad. My focus is actually to answer your question, which is, of course, the taxes are too high. There's not a Marylander I come across that doesn't talk about the tax structure and how we're not competitive with our other states. We're getting our clocks cleaned by Virginia. The evidence is right there. They have $1 billion surplus every year. We have almost $1 billion deficit every year when the delegates and senators go back to Annapolis. So this is a huge issue for us. And I think it's the seminal issue in this campaign. What are we going to do about jobs? How are we going to bring jobs back? Because in terms of the corporate tax, the idea is we're going to have combined reporting. So the big companies, as the lieutenant governor calls them, will actually have to pay their fair share. And we have to support our small businesses. The facts are over 8,000 small businesses have left our state in the last 8 years. You can't look the other way on that. We have almost 200,000 unemployed Marylanders right now. Yet we have so many job openings in the cybersecurity field, in life sciences, that we are not promoting. And so we have to make our tax structure competitive with our neighboring states. This is unsustainable. The idea of the current administration is let's balance our economic future on the backs of more casino gambling and more taxes. In a Gansler-Ivey administration, we're going to be bringing jobs back to Maryland. The lieutenant governor talked about entrepreneurship. Yes, we're number one. We're 40th in tech transfer. So we don't take those ideas and actually make products. And we need to do what New York did, bring manufacturing companies back, give them tax credits to actually employ more people and fill up our tax base.
Next question. We start with Delegate Mazier, and you brought up your marijuana plan, so this is a good chance to elaborate on that. What would you like to do?
Well, I have a comprehensive plan. It's not like I'm suggesting, hey, let's just regulate marijuana because we want the money. It's a very comprehensive approach that I'd encourage you to read on our website, heathermazier.com. And as I mentioned earlier, it starts from this premise that what we've been doing hasn't been working very well. 23,000 people a year had been arrested on marijuana possession charges. We were wasting $280 million annually on just the incarceration, detention, and court costs associated with marijuana possessions. And we know that our laws have been enforced with racial bias. African Americans and whites use marijuana with the exact same frequency, but African Americans are three times more often put in jail for this. Now, we made some important progress this legislative session. In November, I came out with the legalization plan and immediately also conveyed the fact that it's going to take an election and a mandate from voters for us to get this done in 2015. But we could make sure that we walked out of this legislative session decriminalizing possession so that we're not sending people to jail anymore. And I'm proud to have been among the leading voices to get that bill to Governor O'Malley's desk. We are now the 18th state to do this. But we also know from what we're witnessing in Colorado and Washington states where this is happening that it's an important policy reform that also brings with it valuable resources that we can dedicate to making sure that we truly end the achievement gap in our schools with needed new revenue that will not impact the rest of our K through 12 public education system.
Mr. Gansler.
Thank you. I'm for medical marijuana. If a real doctor thinks you should have marijuana to help you in the hospice or what have you, that's fine with me. Decriminalization is okay as well. We don't really put people in jail for that small amount. I don't believe we should go to legalization. Let the other states, let Colorado and Washington deal with it first and see how it works and then ultimately revisit that issue and see if we want to have kids going into 7-Eleven and getting a Diet Coke, a bag of Fritos, and a bag of pot. Let's wait a little bit on that. But let's talk about crime for a second, because I brought the issue of reentry into this campaign, and it's an important issue. We spend $1.3 billion putting people in jail in our criminal system, yet we have almost a 50% recidivism rate. 46% of the people that come out are back in within 3 years. 59% come to Baltimore. And we've done nothing. Here's your money. Good luck. Instead, other states have addressed this, Virginia, Oregon, Michigan. Michigan was able to close 20 correctional facilities. And instead of paying $33,000 a year for somebody to be behind bars, we could actually make them productive tax-paying citizens. I've been a prosecutor for 22 years. I prosecuted the snipers. I went to the Supreme Court of the United States myself and argued a case to keep a sexual predator in jail. I put a guy who had raped somebody years earlier in jail. I prosecuted myself. I prosecuted the guy who killed Monsignor Thomas Wells and put him in jail. I believe in criminal systems. But what we have here is somebody who believes in mass arrests, the prison scandal that happened in Baltimore, and somebody who voted against letting you know whether a neighbor of yours is a sex offender in your neighborhood. And then he was the only delegate that voted against continuing the statute of limitations for children who were molested to be able to bring those cases in court.
Mr. Brown.
Well, let me just reject those facts that you just recently heard, but I can't take the time to answer the question and reject them fully. It's outlandish.
No, you get extra time.
Well, then let me take the extra time at the
Go
end
for it.
On that.
Take a 30.
I do not support the full legalization of marijuana. But I think it's financially enticing. Let's look at what happens in Colorado and Washington. Look at the full range of the socioeconomic impacts on those states before we proceed. I'm at a red light at the intersection on legalization of marijuana. I did support the legalization, or I should say the decriminalization of possessions of small amounts of marijuana, for the most part, for the same reasons articulated by Delegate Mazier. Racial bias, prosecutions and arrests for small amounts. Consumption levels are the same in the white community and the African-American community, but we're seeing much higher arrest rates among African-Americans. Instead, what we should do, as we decriminalize it, we'll save about $100 million which is what we currently spend in prosecuting those cases. We'll take the $100 million and we'll implement my public safety plan, which I rolled out earlier on the campaign trail. My public safety campaign focuses on reducing recidivism. Recidivism used to be closer to 50% in Maryland. Today it's closer to 40%, which is about the national average. There are states that are doing better. So we're going to continue to drive it down. Better case management, better mental health counseling, better substance abuse treatment, better skills training for our incarcerated population. I want our incarcerated population to reenter the community, not to be considered a scourge of society, but an extension of our workforce, a part of our community, members of our family. We'll do that as we change our attitudes and fund their rehabilitation so they can successfully reenter. The decriminalization of marijuana gives us the opportunity to do that.
Would you like additional time?
That's going to take,
move
it's
on.
Going to take 2 minutes.
You can have 1 minute.
Okay, great. Thanks. The Attorney General referenced a bill that I fought for 5 years in Annapolis. And in the sixth year in Annapolis, I didn't sponsor the bill. So that's been characterized as walking away from it. Why didn't I sponsor it? And when you understand how Annapolis works, sometimes you get things done in legislation. Sometimes you get it done other ways. And you know how we got it done that sixth year? Is we went to the courts. Because it was a statute that would have changed the policy or provision in the courts. We went to the courts and said, since you have been opposing this for 5 years, change your rule and do it by rule. And today, what I spent 5 years fighting for is now the law in Maryland because the courts saw the light and they changed their court process, their court rules. So what we've been fighting for is now the law in Maryland.
Let's go back to the audience. Jackie. We have a question from Jackie, and we're going to start with Mr. Gansler first on this.
Good evening. Affordable housing is an issue across the state in every jurisdiction. Will you provide additional resources for affordable housing? And if so, where will you find those resources?
Thank you for the question. I was.
By the way, we're going to keep answers a little tighter here, I just found out.
To let you know, you're actually not in charge.
Wait, yeah. This thing's in charge.
So I was elected by my peers, the other 49 attorneys general in the nation, to run the National Association of Attorneys General. And I took on the big banks, Bank of America, Wells Fargo, J.P. Morgan, for people who were being foreclosed upon as a result of robo-signing and predatory lending. As a result of that, we have gotten $1.5 billion into the state of Maryland to keep tens of thousands of families in their homes that would have otherwise been foreclosed upon. I went to the meetings. I rolled up my sleeves. I did the negotiations. So I believe wholeheartedly in affordable housing. We need to have it in every jurisdiction. We've made some strides in affordable housing, but we need to do more. For example, we're hoping to have the FBI come to Prince George's County. What we don't want to have happen is the FBI becomes an enclave. People come there from other states because the taxes drive home to where they live. We want to make sure there's affordable housing and commerce around the FBI so that people want to come to Prince George's County and have an economic life there as well. So, yes,
sir,
it's a big issue.
We're going to wrap, and we're going to keep these to about
quicker.
A minute. Mr. Brown,
the question was about affordable housing. I've got an affordable housing plan. I rolled it out, I think, in February. We're going to build on our successes. We've delivered about 18,000 affordable housing units in the last 8 years and created jobs in doing it. In my plan, we start by creating a statewide affordable housing policy because we don't have one today. I increase investments in the Rental Housing Works program, focusing on veterans, on the reentry population that I was talking about in the last question, and focusing on kids who are aging out of foster care. I'm also going to increase the investments in the Maryland Affordable Housing Trust from $2 million to $20 million. The increase in that trust and in the Rental Housing Work program, coupled with the federal tax credits that we rely on, that's going to leverage hundreds of millions of dollars in affordable housing projects in Maryland. We're going to build on our successes. I've got a plan, a specific plan for that. Let me just say on foreclosures, a few years ago, we passed some of the most sweeping legislation. The Washington Post said the O'Malley-Brown administration, some of the most sweeping foreclosure reform laws. About 2 years ago, we got a settlement, a national settlement, $1.5 billion. A lot of that money went to homeowners. About $50 million went to the Attorney General's office. I'd like to see us use that money for more mediation services for homeowners and foreclosure prevention counseling for homeowners.
Delegate Mazur, quick answer here, and then we're going to go to closing statements, and you'll go first, just as a heads up.
Jackie, too many families in our state are one disaster away from becoming homeless. A fire, a flood, a layoff, an illness. Housing is incredibly expensive in our region. I invest in $25 million of additional funding in the Maryland Affordable Housing Trust every year for 4 years, paid for from the savings from that marijuana decriminalization we talked about. I try to make sure that we change the criteria so that who gets access to that funding is high opportunity areas where we're building affordable housing near metro stations and schools where people want to be able to live and interact in their communities. And I end the source of income discrimination that exists against people because they have a disability or they're a senior or they're paying for their housing because they have alimony or a Section 8 housing voucher. And we can address homelessness by focusing on what's working really well in Utah in a housing first model and focusing on the saving that we get on the back end in our educational, in the healthcare system and the criminal justice system in front loading the cost for getting people into housing.
Time for closing statements. The candidates selected the order of this in advance. We're a little tight on time, so it'll be a little under 60. Obviously, Delegate Mazur's first.
Thank you so much. Our common good is so much more important than the special interests. It's time for a governor that puts Maryland families first. There are important decisions and choices in this election. And let me tell you whose side I stand on. I believe that corporations and millionaires should pay their fair share so that we can give middle class and small business tax relief. I believe that we can build a stronger economy with a living wage and equal pay for men and women. I will enact a truly universal pre-K program and end the achievement gap in our schools. And I will put the oil and gas companies on notice that we are unequivocal champions for the environment and a clean bay. I will make sure that we stand up for homeowners, not big banks and lenders, and will fight to make sure that child care, housing, and college is more affordable for the average middle-class family. You have a choice on June 24th. I ask for your vote because together we can address these challenges.
Go ahead, sir. A little less than a minute.
It was supposed to be 60 seconds. Marylanders
don't expect government to solve all the problems, but they do expect their public sector leaders, those who are running for governor and lieutenant governor, to understand the problem, to have a sense of urgency, to create the conditions for opportunity, responsibility, so that we can all share in our prosperity. Over the last 8 years, we've made a lot of progress. Best in the nation public schools, we still have work to do. Driving crime down to levels we haven't seen in three decades, still work to do. One of the strongest economies in the country. I need your help, not only in the next few days to get elected on June 24th, but in the next 4 years to implement my universal pre-K program and my program to bring more career technology education into our schools. I need your plan to continue to drive your partnership to continue to drive down crime and to create jobs in Maryland. I can't do it alone. I've got the greatest running mate that you could imagine in Ken Ullman, Howard County Executive.
Sir,
even together, we can't do it alone.
Time.
We need you
Mr.
to build
Gansler,
a better Maryland.
A little less than a minute.
In my final closing statement, I could remind you of the tax burden and the failure to create jobs that is literally choking the middle class. But instead, what I'd like to do is take you to the day after the election. If the special interest and status quo that have literally bought the lieutenant governor are successful against the people and families of Maryland, what would happen? Well, I take you to a five-year-old boy named Jazaniah, who I see on Saturday mornings at Carroll Park at the Inner City Lacrosse League that I started. We call him Jazz. If we don't stand up against the Annapolis lobbyists and the special interests, Jazz will never have the opportunity to go to a good school in a safe neighborhood with clean air and a revitalized Chesapeake Bay. I ask for your vote on June 24th for Jazz, for you and your family, and for the future of the great state of Maryland.
Thanks to each of the candidates for being with us tonight. Thanks as well to the League of Women Voters and our undecided voters. For all of us at MPT, have a good night.